So an important part of that is the dress. Often people, just by seeing devotees, the way they dress, they can understand that this is something Krishna consciousness is enjoying. Just the way devotees dress is so colorful, it stands in contrast to the drabness of ordinary kami dress and the drabness of material life. So for devotees to dress as devotees is good for their own Krishna consciousness. Of course, you can become Krishna conscious in suit and tie or any dress. Dress is not the most vital factor, but it is important. Srila Prabhupada dressed, and he introduced this Vaishnava dress in Western countries. So from this we can understand that it is important, because in many ways it would have been easier if he hadn't done so. He could have asked people to chant Hare Krishna and not have introduced details of Vaishnava culture like Vaishnava dress. But he did introduce these details of culture for various reasons. One reason is that this prepares the devotee for entering the spiritual world, where the dress is like this, the food is as Krishna eats, even the style of music, it's not rock and there's no rock and roll in the spiritual world. So by dressing like this, we become accustomed to dressing in the way that Krishna and his devotees. And that also makes the devotee feel more like, yes, now I'm devoted. By dressing in a suit, one may identify himself more with the business community or the political community, or by dressing in rough working clothes, he might identify himself with factory workers. By dressing in police uniform, he feels more like a policeman. So in the same way, by dressing in devotee clothes, it helps one to feel more like a devotee. And it helps us to feel different. Devotees are different to non-devotees. Because the goal of life of the devotees is to go back to Godhead, back to Krishna. So the dress helps to make us feel the difference. That with this dress goes the identity of a devotee and the responsibility of a devotee. When non-devotees see devotees dressed in sari or dhoti, with tilak, and all the neck beads, all these things, they also can understand these are Krishna devotees. So that's good for the non-devotees also, that they can think of Krishna just by seeing the devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while describing who is a devotee, he gave different stages, and he said that the topmost devotee is one upon seeing who others automatically chant the name of Krishna. So it's a wonderful way of preaching, that just by dressing like this, at least those who have seen devotees before, they can understand, oh, this is a Krishna-ite. And even those who don't know what it is, when they see, they'll ask someone else, what is that? Oh, that's a Krishna-ite. So just by saying the name of Krishna, or thinking the name of Krishna, they become purified. So it's an important part of preaching that devotees are seen as much as possible. They're seen in public. Once I had an experience, I've been preaching for some time in Bangkok, the capital of Thailand. You know anyone who heard of Thailand? It's not a very well-known country. It's about 60 million people, just three countries east of India, southeast India. So that Bangkok is another big, horrible city. It's about, 10 million people or something. So there were only two of us, brahmacharis at that time, who were going out regularly into the city for book distribution and various duties. And we both went at the same time to India, and we attended the festival, and we had some extended period there. We went outside Bangkok for about 2 months. Yeah, both of us together at the same time, we went outside. Then we both together went to apply for a new visa in the Thai consulate in Calcutta. So the man who accepted our application, he said, what happened to you? We didn't see you in Bangkok for such a long time. There were only two of us, but we didn't know how people were noticing us. And they noticed that when they didn't see us for some time, they noticed that also. So people definitely notice devotees, and that is certainly for their benefit. They notice devotees who are dressed as devotees. And that's also an impetus for the devotee to behave like a devotee. Actually, in any monastic tradition, there's no question of monks giving up their habits and put...
Habit, you know, it's the monastic dress, it's called a habit.
There's no question of giving up their monk's dress and putting on regular common clothes. It would be considered grievous, a very, very strange and grievous offense for a monk to put on ordinary clothes, and people would suspect, what is he doing? He must have some wrong motive. Because as long as he's dressed in the monk's dress, then that people know that he's a monk, and that protects him. He can't perform sinful and wrong activities. Now, Prabhupada made some allowance for devotees living in temples to sometimes adopt regular dress for distributing books, and sometimes maybe there's some legal work or something, or maybe some call for them. But we see sometimes devotees who are living in temples, even, you know, even most of the time they don't wear devoted clothes. So it's always better to wear devoted clothes. Especially if you wear clothes like jeans, then you have to wear the same ones again and again, day after day. It's very unclean, actually. It's difficult to wear fresh clothes every day because they don't dry. It takes a long time to dry after you wash them. So this is the devotee's uniform, dhoti or sari, tila, koti mala. For men, shaved head. For women, discuss that a little bit more in a moment. This is especially, of course, for those who are temple resident devotees. Those who are living at home and doing some job or whatever, that's understandable if most of the time they don't wear devotee clothes. But at least in the morning, if you're doing sadhana in the morning, it's nice to wear devotee clothes during that time, morning and evening. And when you visit the local temple or Nauhata center, it's nice to change into devotee clothes. And certainly, men who are living in the temple, they should, unless there's a real need for it, they should keep their head regularly shaved, a minimum once a month they should shave, if not more often. About women's hairstyles,
do you say hairstyle like that?
This whole idea of hairstyle is a modern idea, that they're all different fashions, how you can make your hair go this way or that way, or so many different varieties. In Bhagavatam, it's stated one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, Lavanyam Kesha Dharana. People will think they're very beautiful by having different hairstyles. But in Vedic culture, there's a specific way women should have their hair according to their status, according to their marital status. This whole idea of cutting the hair, making different hairstyles means cutting the hair in different ways. But actually, the woman's hair shouldn't be cut unless her husband dies. And to do so before that is very inauspicious. So it should be left to grow long and parted in the middle with a single plait at the back. Prabhupada said even if it's parting should be there, but even if the parting is at the side, that means that's a sign of a prostitute. Yeah. That means you can recognize. Because in Vedic culture, you can't just... Generally, you won't see women on the street anyway, but if you do, you can't just walk up to them and speak to them. Even now, it's considered very improper behavior. Just if you see a woman, just you don't know, just to go up and speak to them. But men who are looking for prostitutes, if they see a woman with the hair parted at the side, they know, all right. They'll go to that area, they'll see, all right, this is a prostitute, I can speak to. Open. And then after the husband dies, the hair can either be kept loose or preferably cut, or even maybe it may shave also. But generally just kept short trimmed. So when Prabhupada came to in the West, actually all the devotee mantajis, they all used to keep their hair like this, parted in the middle and plaited at the back. And it's only recently that now all the, our devotee women all started wearing different hairstyles. But it's actually, it's modern Rakshasa culture. That's described in Bhagavatam, that Rakshasa means their style of hair is just all open and scattered. So this may all seem very strange to you. It is our culture, this different hairstyle and all this, either for men or women. It's not Vaishnava culture. Various hairstyles are, after all, simply meant for attracting the opposite sex. That's why also for men, even if they're householders, they have to keep a little hair, this beards, mustaches, all these things, they're not wanted, not desirable. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita is described how Sanatana Goswami met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after Sanatana had escaped from prison. And either because of associating with Muslims or because of being in prison, for whatever reason, he had a beard and mustaches. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sanatana, they embraced, they shed tears of ecstasy, and when they, you know, when they settled down a little bit from their ecstasy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana, go and get shaved. So Prabhupada said that due to his long hair and beard, Sanatana Goswami looked like a hippie. So Prabhupada said, in our Krishna conscious movement, we don't allow long hair and beard. So anyone who wants to join our movement, they have to shave off their beard. Actually, it's very interesting. Maybe you know that there's some controversy over the editing of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, over the editing of it. Because the Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, he composed that in the mid-1960s, and the devotees who were editing at that time were very new and neophyte devotees, and they made many mistakes. And the devotee who edited it, Hayagriva, at that time, he had long hair and big beard. Because in the beginning, Prabhupada was very liberal, but then after some time, he introduced more rules and regulations. So later on, after Prabhupada passed away, Jayadvaita Maharaj went back to the original manuscripts, the original transcripts and manuscripts, and re-edited the Bhagavad Gita, because there were lots of actually very silly mistakes in that. So, of course, there weren't any philosophical mistakes, although some things are not very as clear as they could be. It's a little difficult to explain. And it's just like this. Instead of just see, they put like the sea, S-E-A, because they heard from Prabhupada's dictation. I don't know how you can explain that. Anyway, so in one of the places, Prabhupada writes how a devotee should be clean. So he writes that a devotee should regularly take bath, wash his clothes, shave, clean the building. So remember that Hayagriva was editing, had a big beard. And usually people who have long hair, they become very attached to that hair. That's one reason we shave it. So when he came to the word shave, he shaved it out and kept his long hair. So these are some of the various reasons why the Bhagavad Gita, the original manuscript, was changed. That's one of them. Because it wasn't the original one, Prabhupada said, it had been over-edited. So for men, no hair, or just a shika. And for women, they keep their hair, but it should be tied back, unless their husband has done it. And for women whose husbands are still present, they have to keep a bindi, this brown dot, red dot, in the hair parting sindur. That you all know what that red powder, you have to get that from you. Women with their husbands, they wear jewelry. These are all auspicious signs. In the presence of their husband, when their husband is present at home, they wear these things. Covering the head with the sari cloth, traditionally that's done from the time that the woman is married. During the wedding ceremony, the husband covers her head with the sari for the first time. And then, after that time, she always keeps the head covered in the presence of respectable people or in public. Okay, so that's a quick overview of Vaishnava appearance, and I'll take questions. There's still some kind of questions.
Should we do anything, or we shouldn't do anything, in case that there is an evident betrayal on the part of one of the spouses? Betrayal means yes, connections.
Yeah. This question has to be seen in terms of the particular case. You would have to consult other devotees about what to do, because according to the circumstances you have to see. In Vedic culture, this is considered, in any culture, where there's any culture anywhere, this is considered a serious transgression of behavior, proper behavior. Unfortunately, in the modern age, free mixing of the sexes is the norm. It's actually demoniac culture. What to do about it in each individual case? Well, ideally, you should be able to consult with more senior devotees who can give advice what to do according to the particular circumstance. In Indian culture, if the wife has good reason to be angry with the husband, she doesn't talk to him. That's one way of dealing with it. I mean, she'll go on doing her duties, she'll serve him, do everything, but she won't talk to him. Anyway, as I said, these things, that's just something on the side. But when this happens, it becomes a very complex situation. Yeah, what that comment about the woman, that's not really directly connected. Devotees shouldn't do this. If you want to be a devotee, don't do this nonsense, rascal. Get married and remain faithful to your husband or wife. If you want to be a devotee, you should behave like a devotee, not like a demon. You see, even people, there are many people who are meat eaters, and they have common decency to maintain marital fidelity. Yeah, there are many meat eaters who don't have any high philosophy as we do, but they have the common decency to maintain marital fidelity. That is Ravana's policy, to enjoy other people's wives. So exactly how to deal with it in each circumstance, that you'll have to consult local senior devotees if there are any. And if senior devotees themselves do this, then it's a very, then they're very much misusing their senior rank, setting a very bad example.
Gotcha.
So all I can say, thank you, if we are at all going to implement Srila Prabhupada's dream of making the whole world Krishna conscious, then at least, we have to start off by at least following basic moral principles. If we can't act like even normal moral human beings, then where's the question of so big high philosophy?
By which principles should one be guided when choosing or accepting future wife or husband?
Well, there are many different considerations. The main one is that husband and wife should be willing to cooperate for mutual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because without Krishna consciousness, even if husband and wife live a mutually compatible life, then what is the use? There's no meaning to it. But one reason we see that that married life in India as compared to the West is generally much more happy and peaceful and stable is that they're very careful before marriage. They consider it very carefully. There are many different considerations. Astrological matching is important, but it's not the only factor. There are many others also. In general, it's seen that the wife should be such that she can look up to the husband as a daimyo. Yeah, she should be able to look up to the husband. So it'll be difficult for her to look up to him if she is physically taller than him, or from a more wealthy background, or a more educated background, or older than him. So the wife should be younger, not more educated, not from a rich background if the husband is not from a rich background. The basic principle is that the husband has to be willing to take responsibility for financially maintaining the family, and the wife takes charge of managing the home, serving the husband, and taking the main role in looking after children. So before marriage, if these things are understood, it makes things a lot easier afterwards. Otherwise, what usually happens is that by the power of Maya, a young man, or even not young man, a man and woman are attracted, are mutually attracted to each other. And that there's a period called falling in love, in which by the power of Maya, one cannot see the faults of the other, even if they're obvious. But this euphoria doesn't last very long. Marriage isn't so much about, you know, some writing poems and some kind of euphoric loving feeling, but it's day-to-day existence together. And actually, real love is not so much about playing violins in the moonlight and so many ridiculous things, but it's more about things like washing the clothes and cooking the bread and all this kind of thing. Love, I mean, this what is called falling in love, it's one kind of insanity. So that's why the Indian system is that marriages should be arranged. In the Western countries, they can't understand this. They say, oh, it's a very... And is a compassionate and a well-wisher to all, because he has no personal false ego. Now, in this material world, when one is envious of Krishna, that is a perverted expression of love for Krishna. And, and instead of loving every other living being, one feels inimical towards them. Because every living being in this material world is falsely trying to be an enjoyer of the material world. So everyone is in competition with everyone else. Everyone is trying to dominate everyone else and enjoy the resources of the material world as if we were ourselves the enjoyer of God, which we are not. So when you see someone has got more facility to enjoy this material world than myself, then we become envious. And even if we carry these perverted sentiments into devotional service, then we can also feel envious of other devotees. Even if we carry this perverted mentality into devotional service, then we can even become envious of other devotees. If the envious mentality, if we carry that, if we maintain that in while performing devotional service, then we can even become envious of other devotees. Because our tendency from our perverted mentality from many, many lifetimes has been that I should be the center of attention, everyone should respect and honor me. Now, in devotional service, we're supposed to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And one who does that, who performs devotional service very nicely, they naturally become honored by other devotees. But as much as we have that enjoying mentality within our hearts, we think, well, I would like to be honored by others. And thus we become envious of devotees who are honored for performing nice devotional service, because we think, I should be honored. So such a mentality is most detrimental for advancing devotional service. It may even be that someone performs his service very enthusiastically and well, but because they're not so much for the pleasure of Krishna, but they're thinking other devotees will honor me. And sometimes someone may even show themselves as being a very humble devotee, but they show themselves as humble because they want to be honored as being humble. And while externally appearing humble, they're actually envious of devotees. So this envy is very deep-rooted. It is the expression of our forgetfulness of Krishna and lack of willingness to serve and love Krishna. So we can overcome this by considering the philosophy of the Absolute Truth, by very deeply trying to understand the philosophy as presented in Srila Prabhupada's books, and also by very sincerely performing devotional service. That's why when we chant Hare Krishna, we have to do so in a prayerful mood. Chanting the holy names cleanses the heart. That is the first symptom of chanting the holy names. But we actually have to want it to be clean, otherwise it won't be clean. Therefore, we have to chant in a prayerful mood, understanding that I'm meant to be the servant of Krishna, not the enjoyer of this material world. And then gradually this envious mentality can be overcome.
No, the question was not on envy, but on jealousy, family jealousy.
Family jealousy.
Yeah, when one is jealous of another.
Well, envy and jealousy is synonymous.
Yeah, that's why.
Well, that, but I, okay, you can explain that. But actually, it's this. It's if you get to the root of it, it's the same answer that all these problems. The root of them is envy of Krishna. Very according to mentality of the performer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Manasa deho geho jukichu mor apiruntu apade manasa. My mind, my home, my body, everything I've offered in your service, O Krishna. So if you're actually doing everything for Krishna, then it's very favorable for advancement. Therefore, we should have this mentality of dedicating our lives to Krishna in whichever social position we may be in, form sadhana, that will help everything to become favorable.
How can Krishna consciousness change one's fate if...
Krishna can do everything. Krishna is not under the control of the astrological chart. Of course, you can make an astrological chart for Krishna too. Yes, Gauda Muni made the chart for Krishna. He said, oh, this boy is just like Narayan. So astrology showed, because all the planets aligned themselves at the time of Krishna's birth, to be in the most auspicious positions. But that doesn't mean that Krishna is under the control of the stars. Rather, because they are his servants, they align themselves in those positions at that time. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Saradhaman Paritta Jama Mekam Sharam Raja Aham Tam Sarva Papa Iho Moksha Sharam Masha Jaha. Prabhupada had a severe heart attack while sailing from India to America. He said that actually my time was supposed to be finished there, but Krishna extended my life because I had some work to do. Even the lines on your hand, they change throughout your life. It's not absolutely fixed. Astrology is a Vedic science and it has its use, but for devotees, hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam is more important. One who has full faith in Krishna crosses over birth and death. The demigods bow down to him.
All relations in family life between husband and wife are based on sex affection. Following the fourth regulative principles, these all relations break. But so far there are no spiritual relations settled.
The fourth, why the fourth? Somebody said we cut it off the bottom or something. You won't get noticed. Now, materialistic family life is based on sex, and it's family life based on sex is miserable. And Krishna conscious household life is based on being Krishna conscious. We should read and chant together and worship the deities, sing bhajans, and Krishna conscious is meant to raise our consciousness. Otherwise, life based on sex is simply miserable. No happiness, simply frustration. Even more so for those who have the higher knowledge of Krishna consciousness.
Why many Indian tribes, like people from many different tribes, they don't have nice beards and mustache. They don't grow.
Chinese.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the American presidential election? Let's keep it focused on Krishna consciousness.
How the violation of this fourth principle will tell on the, once a month, will tell on the spiritual life. Will it be harmful, spiritual progress?
Well, if you don't know, don't find out. I mean, Krishna consciousness.
No, it's regards kirtan, during kirtan. Mm-hmm. Sometimes devotees, they jump upon each other during kirtan, and those who are under, they're crying out of pain. Or sometimes altogether, they jump on one devotee. How should we understand all this?
Yeah. How would you understand? It's called madness. So we don't find any description in Chaitanya Charitamrita like this. Not that Prabhupada teaches to dance like this. Have you seen on TV American football? Have you seen that? You know what that is? Kirtan is not supposed to be. It's not supposed to be an athletic performance or a violent performance. Perform kirtan for the pleasure of Krishna.
Why is it favorable to take prasadam by your hand?
Well, even from the... according to Ayurveda, just by the touch, you start to relish the food. Because each food has a different texture. Also, the way that Vedic cooking is, or then the preparations are supposed to be
mixed and taken together. You mix the rice with the dal and the sabji, or you put a little chapati, take the sabji and the chapati like that. This knife and fork is meant for meat.
You can tell also about the right hand, because here she has rice.
Yeah. Well, that's, apart from anything else, a hygienic measure. The left hand is used for unclean things like wiping the backside after passing through.
How often should we wash our clothes, sari? And how many saris is it advised to have?
Actually, this culture is even more easily practiced in a warm country where there's nice sunshine. And you can sari, you wash it and it will be dry in a few minutes. But anyway, the standard Prabhupada introduced in the West, even in these cold climates, was that at least once a day the cloth should be changed. So if you do that, then you only need two. Although it may be useful to have an extra one.
What to do if young people want to marry? Well, one of them is devotee and the other is not.
Why should a devotee want to marry another one? How is that advantageous for devotional dancing? What is the reason for marrying if it's not for maybe advancement of devotional service? It's just a mind. So unless the other partner is willing to take up devotional service, then you're simply inviting trouble. Okay, I'm just going to distribute a little prasad now. 5 minutes or 2 minutes.